Stop negotiating with yourself, number one. Cut it out. If you say you're going to get up at 5:30 in the morning and go to the gym, then get your happy ass up and do it. Because if you don't interrupt that, because everything that happens in our lives, and I know you know this, Janae, is a pattern. If we overeat, that's a pattern. If we work out every day, that's a pattern. So understand your patterns that support you and understand the patterns that don't. Like I get asked all the time, Dave, what's your ritual in the morning? What do you do every day? The first thing I do when I get up is I make my bed. The second thing I do is I go out and in the morning, when the sun comes up, I want that morning sunlight on my upper torso, on my chest, my arms, my shoulders, and my face. I do that for 9 minutes. And then I do three sets of 30 deep diaphragmic breaths. Why? Because I'm oxygenating my body first thing in the morning. It's beautiful.
Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. Want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
In this episode, I get to speak with Dave Albin. Join us for an inspiring episode as we dive into the remarkable journey of Dave, the number one firewalk instructor in America. Dave shares his transformation from a tumultuous childhood to finding purpose and success in guiding others through firewalking experiences. From overcoming adversity to embracing resilience, Dave's story is one of hope and empowerment. Tune in to discover how one man's journey from despair to triumph can inspire us all. Dave, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast.
Oh, it is all my pleasure. Yeah.
So I love to go back and yes, you've been doing firewalks for the past 35 years. In fact, this year, 2023 marks the 35 year anniversary for the firewalking experience. Can you share with us the story of your personal transformation from the brink of despair to becoming the number one firewalk instructor in America?
Oh, righty then. Boom, here we go, kids. It pretty much started the moment I was born. I say all the time that two most important times in your life is the moment you were born and the moment you figure out why. So I'm 2 months before I was born, Janae, what happened was my biological father, we don't know what happened to him. We just know something happened. And to save his life, they had to put a plate in his head. And there was a lot of pain associated with that plate, excruciating pain, apparently. He told my mom he couldn't take it, didn't know how long he was going to be able to take it. And 2 months before I'm born, man, he turns to her and says, hey, I'm going to the grocery store. We never saw or heard from him again. So I was born to a single mom. She had two other boys. We had another cousin and my grandmother. We were all living in a one-bedroom apartment. Mom's working up the street at the Roosevelt Hotel in Hollywood, California. We're living very close to Hollywood High School. And so you'll hear me talk all the time about single moms, and that's because I love them and support them, and it's hard for them. And I know that my mother struggled greatly to try to feed six mouths. And she came from that kick butt era, right? I believe it's the greatest generation that ever walked the planet. The ones that came through the Great Depression, the ones who fought World War II. Back in the day when all the men went off to war in World War II, some of the men in the Navy and the Marines were in the Pacific fighting the Japanese, and the Air Force and the Army was in Europe fighting the Nazis. So while the men were gone doing all that, guess what the women were doing? Everything, right?
Everything else.
Building Jeeps and tanks and munitions. And my mom was known as Rosie the Riveter. My biological mother was known as Rosita Rivers. She worked for McDonnell Douglas. She built airplanes. She's out there on a wing, man, driving rivets, right? So they knew hard work, and my mom was no exception. And she was working her tail off at the Roosevelt Hotel as a server, but it wasn't enough. It's just what she couldn't feed six mouths. And so she did a very loving thing. When I was 5 years old, she went to her oldest sister, Pat and Bob Albin, and said, will you guys adopt David? And they did. And so now they moved me from Hollywood to Long Beach. Talk about the perfect life. My dad's a highly decorated military career officer in the Army and National Guard. He worked in the Pentagon, pretty well known. And so we never needed anything. We had a nice house, food on the table, had a nice car, camping, vacations. It was wonderful until when I turned 11. Literally the first day of summer, 1960, four. I'm 11 years old. The very first day of summer, mom comes and gets me. I'm up early. I'm in the TV room watching TV, eating Captain Crunch, right? And she came and got me and brought me in and set me down at the kitchen table when Bob and Pat were both there. And she put her hand on my hand. I'll never forget the look on her face. And she looked at me with tears in her eyes. And she said, David, we need to tell you something. And what we need to tell you is we're not your parents. Mm. Okay. What? Time out. What is that? What do you mean you're not my parents? That's like walking me outside and saying, hey, the sky's not blue.
Yeah.
It looks pretty blue to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was a very interesting moment. And shortly after that, Janae, they started drinking. Now they had sworn off drinking when they adopted me at five. And I don't know if it was the pressure. Kennedy had just been assassinated November of 63. Dad knew a lot what was going on behind the scenes, the threat of missiles and Cuba and Russia. The Cuban crisis was going on. So Dad was pretty stressed out. And maybe it was because they told me, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know that I'll ever know. I just know they started drinking. And that got ugly real fast. Mm. So I watched these two beautiful people turn in. My mom was a friendly drunk, if you will. Dad, not so much. He was pretty violent. And so one day they went to the grocery store back in the 60s. You did that all the time. You could leave your kids home. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
And so they left. And I'm like, I know where the booze is, man. It's right over there. They're hiding it in plain sight. I want to know what it is. I'm curious. And so I went and got a coffee cup. It's brandy. Oh, God. And I poured about a half a cup. Boom. Down it went. That was it. That's all I needed.
It's the beginning.
Yeah, man. I was an alcoholic on the spot. Mm. I never had a chance. Because I started thinking about drinking again, stealing it. And it's escalated so fast.
Yeah.
I went from hanging around good people to hanging around bad people. My grades went into the toilet. I didn't care about school. I didn't care about anything. Mm. And so by the time I got to high school, my junior year, they called me into the principal's office one day and said, Albin, out. We're done. You're a threat to our school. Now, I didn't really care. It didn't bother me at all because I didn't think there was anything they were going to teach me where I was going to make a living off of it anyway. I was already an entrepreneur. I already had entrepreneurial spirit to me. Mm-hmm. I'd had a paper route when I was young. I learned how to run my own business there. I grew up just across the street from a golf course. And so here's what I learned about golfers. So I would take my Stingray bike and I'd go ride the perimeter. And guess what I would find? Mm-hmm. Golf balls, lots of them. I'd bring them home. I'd clean them up. I'd go back to the golf course and the boxes they came in, they throw them in the trash. I'd take them out of the trash and bring them home and line my golf balls up in them according to the manufacturer. Titleist, Maxfli, Dunlop, mm-hmm. Royal. And then I'd go back into the parking lot and guess what I would do? I'd sell them back to the dog. And then mom was great. Pat had a green thumb. And again, she came out of the depression, oldest of six kids. She knew how to grow flowers, man. They were beautiful. And our whole backyard was full of them, thousands. Mm. And she would go cut them for me and arrange them. And she had an eye for color as well. So she knew how to put them together. They were gorgeous. And she would actually take the flower and cut it at an end, not at the end, but at an angle. And the reason she did that, she told me that would open up more surface area. So mm-hmm. water would get up into the flower and it would last longer.
Yeah.
And then she would put them in a bucket and she would put seven up in it. Right. In the water. And that would, the florist up the street, my flowers would outlast 2-1 minimum. So that was going on. And right when I got kicked out, I got a really good job. I needed a good job. By that time, I had a pretty ongoing habit. I was into speed. I was working nights and I bought a new car, a new Mach 1 Mustang. I moved to Belmont Shore, California, had my own apartment. Yeah, I was pretty much on my own, but it got worse. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And by the time I was in my third marriage, I married her. She was a bartender. She had three kids. I loved her to death. I loved her kids. But they had to separate. I'm in the basement. They're upstairs to stay away from me because I'm dangerous. I'm violent. I'm drinking. I'm not a nice person. Mm. When I woke up on June 8th, 1988, that was all she wrote. That was threshold. I couldn't take it anymore. I was in so much physical pain, emotional pain. And the only real idea that I thought to deal with this was to take my own life. Mm. Loaded the pistol. And as I'm proceeding to do this, it dawns on me. All right, dude, you know what? You shoot yourself. Then guess what? Yeah, maybe your problems are over, but those three kids upstairs that you love, you're going to ruin their life. Can't do that. We know. What does taking your own life do? It ruins, it kills everybody around you.
Yeah.
And so I'm struggling with that. I've got a moment of compassion there. And all of a sudden I said to myself, all right, I can't do that. I'm almost pissed off at the kids because I couldn't. And then the next thought I had was call Alcoholics Anonymous. Guess what, Junaid? I didn't even know who AA was. I'd never been to an AA meeting. I didn't know anybody that was in AA. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
I don't know, but there it was. So I did. I called them. And I got this wonderful human being on the other line. And I affectionately, to this day, I never met her. But I affectionately named her Madge. Because she was the gatekeeper. She was the one that would make a decision where they would call somebody in AA to come pick you up. And the reason I called her Madge is because she talked like this. she was probably smoking 2 packs of Pall Mall non-filters a day. Right? So she had this really raspy voice. Bless her heart, man. Made my life. She sent a guy to come get me, pick me up, took me to an AA meeting that morning. I went to 4 meetings. They did a couple of things. They gave me a big book. And in that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they all signed it on the front cover. On the open it up, they put their name and their phone number at the top of the page. They said, before you take that first drink, call one of us. Then they gave me one of these. And there's a chip that said 24 hours, the surrender chip. On the back, it said, to thy own self be true. It had the AA logo and emblem and all that on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got another chip at 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and 1 year. And then, as you said earlier, this last June 8th of this year, I picked up one for 35 years.
Amazing.
So it stuck. Here's what happened. Here's how the firewalking thing came to be in Tony Robbins. When I'm getting sober, I had insomnia. My sleep patterns were all over the place in the beginning. Yeah. So I'm up late one night, right? And guess what? There he is, Mr. Wonderful, man.
Mr.
Enthusiasm. He's there, Gunther Ranker. He's selling personal power. And I couldn't stand him. When I first heard him, I thought he was pompous. I thought he was an ass. But because I'm miserable and he's not.
He's not.
Right? He's all motivated, right? Enthusiastic. And so he was selling a program called Personal Power. 30-day program for total success, the man called it. And I'll tell you, he got me to buy the program because of two things. One, he said, we'll do more to avoid pain than we will to gain pleasure during that presentation. And I went, hell, that's me. Because I'm using drugs and alcohol to either try to gain some pleasure or try to run from pain. So that resonated with me. And then the other thing it got me, he said, the driving force in our life, how do we make decisions? We're influenced by two things, inspiration or desperation. And I was pretty desperate. So anyway, I bought it. They sent it to me. It came on these little white things called cassette tapes.
Cassette tapes. I remember.
8 tracks, right? Reel to reel.
Reel to reel.
It was funny, man. Some of your listeners, some of your viewers aren't even going to know what cassette tapes are, man. So anyway, I plugged them in. I did what the man taught me to do. I went all the way through the program and it worked. And then I ended up loaning it to a buddy of mine in AA, Dan, who I just lost about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, so sorry.
Oh, yeah. It's sad. But without him, I'm not here. That's for sure. So anyway, I loaned it to him 7 years later, right? So I'm going through the program in 88, 89, right? I'm listening to the tapes and going to AA and personal development and all that. After I loaned that program to Dan 7 years later in 1995, he calls me on the phone. He said, hey, dude, did you know that Tony Robbins is coming to town? And I'm like, no, I had no clue. He goes, come on, man. You got me into this, man. You got to go with me, dude. Let me look at my calendar. Okay, I can go. He goes, great. I'll call you back. I'll make the arrangements. So he calls me back an hour later. He goes, done. We pick up the tickets at Will Call. They told us that we need to drink a lot of water. We need to stay hydrated through this 4-day event. Mm-hmm. Bring snacks because we're going to spend a lot of time in the room.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? I'm laughing. And anybody that's been to a Robbins event knows why I'm laughing. Uh-huh. That's an understatement.
Oh, yes.
He said, bring a good attitude and be ready to play full out. And I said, Dan, how much was the ticket? $695. What? $695. This is in 95. I don't know what that's worth today.
Yeah.
Other than probably somewhere around 1.2 or 1.3 million. Oh, and as he gets off the phone, he goes, hey, by the way, I want to make sure I let you know we're going to be doing a firewalk. I'm like, what? I'm not saying anything, but my brain went,
no,
absolutely not. We're not doing that. Because up until that point, here's what I can tell you. Fear had controlled everything I said and did. It influenced
everything.
Because
yeah.
fear to me was forget everything and run. Opposed to maybe face everything and rise. So, yeah. And so I got off the phone and I was like, yeah, Dan, no problem. Sure. Yeah, firewalk. Great. No, hell no. Ain't doing it. The big day comes. We get to the event. Tony takes the stage at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Next thing I know, it's after midnight. 10 hours in a room with Robbins. Are you kidding me? And all of a sudden he goes, take your shoes off. And I'm like, oh, now I see
that.
Where you're going with that. I ain't falling for that crap. Now I got a dilemma, though. I'm in a room with 3,500 people at this Robbins event.
Everybody's taking off their shoes.
They're taking their shoes off. And I'm like, stop. What are you doing, people? Don't fall for it. And so now what am I going to do? What am I going to walk out there with 3,500 people with my shoes on? They're all going to know. So I'm like, just chill out, relax. Just take your shoes off. When you get out there, just hide in the back. No one is going to know. Except me.
Except you. You're going to know.
And Dan. So next thing, take your shoes off. Now I know I got to ditch Dan somehow, which is pretty easy when you're in a crowd of 3,500 people walking out into a big parking lot. In fact, it's a lot worse too, because before he gets you going out there, he gets everybody to start clapping and chanting. Now you got 3,500 people going, yes, 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 walking out into this parking lot. You get out there, it's worse. Why? He's got African drummers. You're walking out there, people are clapping and screaming and yelling and drums. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what a freaking dog and pony show Robbins is putting on here. So how do you firewalk 3,500 people? You start with a big fire, right? It's probably 35 feet wide and 70, 75 feet long.
Wow.
And they burn it all day, literally for 10 hours. And they just keep feeding hardwood, loading the wood into the fire.
Yeah,
after
10
hours, it renders. You have this giant pile of coals, this big giant blue flame. It is gorgeous. And so what they do, Junaid, is they take a wheelbarrow over there. They load the coals in a wheelbarrow. They bring the wheelbarrow back in between two lanes of sod, grass. They call it a fire lane. It's 3 feet wide, 18 feet long. They just take a flathead shovel. They sprinkle those coals on top of that grass, and that's what you walk on. Again, I'm having none of it. I'm all the way in the back, hiding out. Here's what Tony Robbins knows. Why did he bring firewalking into his events? Because he knows it's one of the most life-changing experiences on earth, period. End of story. This 1,000-year-old rite of passage ritual he brought into his event. So he wants to make sure everybody has an opportunity to do it. Because if you don't, then you're not going to deal with fear. You're not going to create the paradigm shift. You're not going to face your fears. You're not doing any of that. So what's he do? He knows there's people like me. He knows where we are.
Oh, yeah.
So what's he do? He trains people to come find you. And I had a guy come find me. He came up, got 20 feet from me, locked eyes with me, gets up close to me, looks at me funny, like a dog that hears a funny noise. And he goes, hey, man, are you okay? And when we're not okay, what do we say?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Oh, I'm okay. I'm good. I'm fine. Nothing to see here. Move along, pal. And he said, hey, man, you going to walk tonight? And I said, absolutely not. Why do you think I'm hiding in the back, you fool? And he goes, hey, man, that's no problem. We don't want you to do anything you don't want to do. And I went, wow, okay. This guy's going to get me out of here. I like this guy. Not so much. One stranger asked me one question. Changed my life forever. And the question was real simple. Wouldn't you at least like to watch? I said, yeah, sure. I'd love to watch. Why not? Just watch these people burn their feet off. He said, man, you can't see anything from back here. You're 100 yards away. He's right. I got 3,500 people standing in front. I can't see anything. It's a wall of people. Yeah. I can hear it. The drums are going. People are celebrating. They're already firewalking. They're screaming. They're yelling. They're chanting. They're clapping. The fire's going. Come on. He said, man, just get in line. Eventually, right? Get in line. Eventually, you'll get up there where you'll be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
He was telling the truth.
Yeah.
Well, that one stranger changed my life forever. And the part that's interesting for me is that he has no idea what he did to me and how he influenced, how this whole process influenced me, that I went on to firewalk over 500,000 people in my career. So anyway, yeah, I got in line. Eventually I got up there. In fact, while I'm waiting, this guy comes up and he whispers in my ear. He goes, he knows when you're ready. When he says go, you go. I'm like, what? And phew, he just disappeared into the night. I'm like, who the hell was that? What was that about? And eventually I'm mesmerized. I got to a point where I could see at an angle. And now I'm just staring at it, right? Oh, don't stare at a car accident. So what do?
You go and
stare at it. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm just completely, my focus is over here and I'm not paying attention in front of me. And sure enough, boom, next thing I know, man, there I am.
You're in the fire.
I'm at the front of the line.
But did you take your shoes off?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I took my shoes off in the room because I didn't want to come outside and other people go, hey, look at the guy over there who doesn't have a shoe. So I made a little deal with myself. Just take your shoes off, go just hide in the back. So my shoes were already off. So I get there and I'm staring at the lane. It's bright red. The coals are bright red. It's 18 feet long. The wheelbarrow's there. You can feel the heat coming off. That shit gets
real fast. Yeah.
So I'm staring into the abyss. There's a trainer standing right there. He goes, eyes up. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's right. All right, eyes up. That's right. 10 hours in a room with Tony Robbins. Guess what he taught me? Keep my eyes up. All right, my eyes are up. Don't stare at what you fear. Duh.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, the trainer goes, squeeze your fist and say yes. And I went, yes. And he went, stronger. And I went, yes. And he knew I was leaving it on the table. He knew I was not in 100% peak state. He screamed at me, stronger. I threw my hands in the air. I'm pissed, right? Fight or flight. And I threw my hands in the air and I screamed yes as loud as I could. And he goes, go. Boom. I took off. Remember the guy came up, said, whispered in my ears, he knows when you're ready. When he says go, you go. I went. Here's the first thing I learned about firewalking. When you take the first step, oh, you'll take the second, third, fourth, and fifth. I promise you. When you get to the end, they stop you and they're like, stop, wipe your feet and celebrate. And I'm celebrating and I'm wiping my feet. And all of a sudden it dawns on me. I burnt myself really bad. And so I look at my foot and it's dirty, but there's no burns.
There's no burns.
I'm making it up in my head. What's my other foot? No, it's dirty too, but there's no burns. And so in that moment, here's what I can tell you. I'm down there with 3,500 people. They're all jumping up and down. They're celebrating. It's exhilarating. Your self-belief, your self-confidence, your self-worth comes up instantly. It's collective because you're doing it with a couple thousand other people. It's okay. Where's the bus? Let's get the bus. Get on the bus, people. Let's go climb Everest. What's next? That's how you feel.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. The interesting part was the next day.
Mm.
We all came, right? So it's a four-day event. This is day one, the night of. Now we're coming into day two. So we're standing there in the foyer getting ready to go into the venue. And to this day, Junaid, I don't know how to explain it. I've never seen or witnessed anything like it in my entire life. People were getting along humanistically the way we're supposed to.
Mm.
2020 shredded us, right? This is the total polar opposite of what happened in 2020. Instead of arguing and not getting along, we were treating each other with love and kindness and respect. We did something the night before that was extraordinary, and we all knew that, right? So we're hugging, and people are crying, and they're laughing, and it's such a beautiful thing to witness and be part of. I went on to meet one of Tony's trainers at the event, and I'm talking to him, man. I'm like, dude, you get to do this all the time, don't you? He goes, I sure do. He goes, that must be awesome. He said, well, you can too, possibly. I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you see all those people standing over there with the black shirts and the pink writing on the back? Yeah. He goes, they're volunteers. So they were just like you. They came to an event. They filled out an application. So when you get home, call Robbins Research, ask them for an application to volunteer crew. They'll send you one. Fill it out. Let's see what happens. Sure enough, I did it. 9 weeks later, got a letter in the mail. Dave Albin, congratulations. You've been selected a crew with the Anthony Robbins companies. And there I am, man. My foot's in the door. And when they look at your application, they know where they want to put you. Mm-hmm. I had a security background. And I had a military background. So they wanted to put me on the security team to help take care of Tony's celebrities. I also lived on a farm. So I knew how to split wood. I knew how to run a log splitter. I knew how to run equipment, et cetera. So they put me on the fire building team. That's exactly what I wanted. So I volunteered 5 or 6 times. By the way, I'm spending my own dime. That's on my own dime. I'm spending $1,500 to $2,000 every time I do that.
Yeah.
My wife's not happy. She's like, who the hell is this Tony Robbins guy that you're spending $2,000 every other month to go hang out? And she was right. Absolutely. The beauty is right after that, they offered me a subcontracting position in like 1995, 96. And so when they did that, now they're paying my way. And they did a really smart thing. They gave me a ticket. I took my wife to the next one. And when she went through the program on that night when we graduated, she graduated, we were walking on the beach. She goes, okay, I get it. I drank the Kool-Aid. This guy's pretty awesome. You want to run with this dude? You want to work with him?
Yeah.
I support you 100%. And that's really how she opened the door for me. And then in 2003, Tony offered me the captain's position. That was the big one.
Wow.
That's when I took over all of Tony's firewalks globally. He also paid, because I was homeschooling at the time, he paid for my kids to travel with us, which was a dream come true. 2005, Junaid, we set the world record in London. We firewalked 12,300 people.
Wow.
2014, let me move this forward for you. I'm driving down the road. My phone rings. It's Google. You the Dave Albin that does the firewalks for Tony Robbins? Yeah. If you're not under any non-compete or contractual obligation, we'd like to talk to you about hiring you. Okay. Homeboy's a free agent. What you got? And yeah, there it was. And that's and then once I got there, I realized that the need for this, for corporate team building experiences at this level, I was at the top of my game.
Yeah.
And so I knew there was a huge marketplace. And I was right, because I did Google twice. And after I retired from Robbins, next thing I knew, after Google, I was at NASA, Notre Dame, Virginia Tech, RE/MAX, Chick-fil-A, Heineken, Microsoft, you name it, the big companies, YMCA. I've done everything in between. I've done my high school, my local high school. I speak there. So yeah, it just, no pun intended. Once that happened, we've been going hot and heavy ever since.
Man, I love that story. And it really, there's no question in my mind that's not been answered, right? It's, you've done this plenty of time, and like a well-tuned Tony Robbins event, you've taken us through this journey like a professional, dude, because you've seen that happen firsthand, exactly how to tell that story. So all the questions that I had listed out, like, you've answered every single one of them. But here's something that some people might be wondering.
Sure.
What kind of mental and physical preparation is required for somebody who's attempting these firewalking? Because Tony's not at these events. Who's hyping up these people to say, go do the firewalk? Do you have the African drummers? Like, all of that stuff. Tell me.
Great question. I don't know that I've ever been asked that question in that way. That's really cool. The one thing I did is my research. I looked at firewalking. Mm-hmm. Aside from Tony Robbins, I looked at it. This is a 1,000-year-old ritual.
Yeah.
The cultures around the world that do firewalking is off the chain. The people of the Fahitians, they're incredible with firewalking and fire handling. And look at the people of India. Holy mackerel. They are really into it because it's a graduation. They use it for marriages. They use it when a boy becomes a man, a girl becomes the birth of children.
Sure.
So it's a festival. It's a rite of passage. It's a ceremony. It's very sacred. Portugal, the people of Portugal, the Spaniards, the Native American Indians, the Hawaiians, the Polynesians, it's everywhere. And so I looked at it from that standpoint and I started looking how deep this is. And so I just, when I do my events, I teach them, look, there's 3 ways to do this. I have a video of Oprah, by the way, when she did her firewalk in 2010.
Yeah.
I show them that way. I'm like, look, this is the way we did it at Tony Robbins. Here's Oprah. Take a peek at how she's doing it. If you want to do it that way, great. When you go out there, I'll help you do that. Because I'm right there with them. I walk with every single client.
Wow.
Then I also teach them, look, that's not how I live up here in the Appalachian Mountains in the northwestern part of the state of North Carolina. The Cherokee Indians did firewalking up here. That's not how they did it. They do it this way. So I show them, I give them options. The bottom line is this, just bring your full intention to the fire. Keep your ego in check because the fire, I don't know how the fire knows. I just know it knows. And I know that because I've walked to 500,000 people.
Yeah.
I can look at them when they're standing there getting ready to walk and they've got this fear on their face and the apprehension. And all of a sudden, boom, they go. And then they get to the end and then I get to see their face there. So their whole life changed in 4 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. The other thing that I did is I add the board break to the process. Cha-ching. And here's why I did it. Board break, martial arts, right? Most people know about board breaking. You break it with your bare hand. Uh-huh. I have them write something on front of the board that they want to move towards. I have them write something on back of the board they want to move away from. I have them write anybody's name on the board they're in conflict with. That's really important because if you're walking around the world and you're angry at somebody, that's got to go.
It's got to go.
Don't carry that into your future. If forgiveness or reconciliation is part of that relationship, it ends tonight. You're going to offer it to the fire. And then to create the rite of passage, I haven't write anybody's name on the board that they've lost. So we get them all ready. I do inside the room. I actually firewalk them in the room and I just simulate it. Just act as if. Because your brain doesn't know the difference. You're just going to stand there by your seat and walk in place, and I'm going to get them ready to do that. So when they get them outside, then we've got the board break station. They break the board. We walk them in a circle. We come back. We firewalk them. And then and as soon as they firewalk, I have a proprietary thing that I do to anchor it in forever. And then I give them something that they can have that they can go back to that moment right when they firewalked anytime they want. They can get right back there, which is beautiful. And then they throw their boards in the fire. We get that all on video and photographed. And then after that, I have a proprietary process that I take them through, and I say I have 200 people or 300 or 1,000. It doesn't make any difference. I take them through a process and everyone's hearts calibrate. So everybody at that firewalk's hearts start beating at the same time. And then once you get them there, and then pretty much after that, I tell them, I do a little talk with them and appreciate them and show them some love. And then I give them one of these.
I love it.
And what this is, for your listeners that can't see it or just listening, you hear the noise there. This is a container of the coals from the firewalk. So now it'll say, I firewalked in 2023 with XYZ Corporation.
Nice.
So they get to take that home and put it on their desk and keep it so that they can look at that and have that anchor there forever.
Man, that is powerful. Dude, I love the story. Thank you so much, Dave, for all of your wisdom, all of the stories, the journey.
My pleasure, brother.
Like, it just blows my mind and it opens my heart to, you've got to walk through the fire to get to the other side, to know that, like, you are a possible being. Everything you do is not impossible. It is possible.
Absolutely.
So I think walking through fire is a clear rite of passage, as you said. Yeah. Let's take a quick break and when we get back. You can share 3 hacks that entrepreneurs can implement in their lives today
to
be a better firewalker. I don't know.
Finding the right guest or podcast can feel like searching for a needle in a haystack, unless you bring a magnet. And thanks to Podmatch, a service that automatically attracts your ideal interview guests to your podcast. I've enjoyed using Podmatch for Hacks and Hobbies and interviewed over 100 fantastic guests from this platform alone. Head on over to hacksandhobbies.com/podmatch to save time and find your perfect match. Check out Podmatch today. Again, go to hacksandhobbies.com/podmatch or tap on the link in the show notes.
Hey guys, welcome back. We'll be talking with Dave Albin here on the podcast. He's a firewalk instructor. He's shared his entire journey on how he got into firewalking, the different steps to his life and what inspired him to be in this space. And it's just so inspiring. Thank you so much, Dave. Yeah. You've got three hacks that we can use in our lives as entrepreneurs, as dads, as parents, as human beings. Take it away.
Stop negotiating with yourself, number one. Cut it out. If you say you're going to get up at 5:30 in the morning and go to the gym, then get your happy ass up and do it. Because if you don't interrupt that, because everything that happens in our lives, and I know you know this, Janae, is a pattern. If we overeat, that's a pattern. If we work out every day, that's a pattern. So understand your patterns that support you and understand the patterns that don't. Like I get asked all the time, Dave, what's your ritual in the morning? What do you do every day? The first thing I do when I get up is I make my bed. The second thing I do is I go out and in the morning, when the sun comes up, I want that morning sunlight on my upper torso, on my chest, my arms, my shoulders, and my face. I do that for 9 minutes. And then I do three sets of 30 deep diaphragmic breaths. Why? Because I'm oxygenating my body first thing in the morning. It's beautiful. Because here's what we know. No disease, sickness, and illness can survive in an oxygenated environment.
Amen.
So why not get all the oxygen into your body that you can first thing? Then after I do that, then I go to the other side of my cabin and I do grounding. I do earthing, right? So I go put my bare feet on the planet, whether it's grass or sand or dirt or mud, whatever, just go put your feet. And I won't go into the benefits here. You can go Google it, but it's there for you to find. So also while I'm doing that, I'm also doing some more diaphragmic breathing. Then I come into the house. I do my meditations. I do my sound therapy. And that's, again, every day. I don't negotiate. Now, sometimes if the weather may interrupt me, then I may have to adjust. But I try to do it every single day unless there's a blizzard. And then after I do that, then I hydrate. I drink hydrogen influenced water. You can go buy them. They're portable. It's a hydrogen generator. Put the cleanest water you can get in there, press the button. It infuses it with hydrogen, drink it. Again, the facts are there about how good that is for you. And by the way, stay away from tap water. Go get good water. That makes a big difference. And then it's off to take my shower for the morning. I take a nice hot shower. I use special soap. I use what's called miracle soap. And then after that hot shower, you probably know it's coming. I live in the mountains. The cold water coming into my cabin is 56 to 57 degrees.
Oh, dang, that's cold.
Boom. I turn off the hot water and I go, and you know what? I have the conversation all the time. So don't think I'm immune to this. I'm like, come on, Dave, you really knew to do it today. You did it yet. Shut up. No, we're doing it today. So I set a timer for 3 minutes and I turn on that cold water and I stand there and I let it hit me right here. And when it does that, let me tell you what it does. It takes the breath out of you every single time. It's not, oh, you get used to it. No, you don't. No, your body goes into fight and flight. That's where it starts burning all that inflammation. It's so good for you. And so, yeah, it's cold. But what you learn from it is the breathing. You learn how to control your breathing, which is really important. And you guys know this. Entrepreneurs know this. What doesn't challenge you doesn't change you.
Yeah.
Here's what I know. Here's the hack. Do the things that are hard in life and your life will become easier. Do the easy things in life and your life will become harder. And then finally, one of my mentors told me, and I live by this creed, and that is, again, I said it earlier, the two most important times, the moment you were born, the moment you figure out why. But what my mentor told me one time was, he goes, Dave, here's what I want you to know. Every human on this planet has two lives. And the second one starts when you realize you got only one.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Dude, those are some powerful hacks. Stop negotiating yourself. Do the things that are hard in life and realize that you only have one life to live.
That's it.
Man, powerful. Dude, I am totally pumped up. I can't wait to go take that hot and cold shower because I love the way you're doing it, right? Because you're saying take the hot shower first.
Yeah.
And then take the cold shower. A lot of people are like, hey, just take the cold shower. But depending on your body structure and what you've done previously, you want to make sure you regulate it because you might pull a muscle if you go directly into the cold.
And again, and I want to bathe up. I want to wash my hair and I want to clean my body and do all that. And again, I use special soap so I don't have the chemicals. And then after that, it's okay, shut it down.
Set it up.
Set your timer. Here it comes. Boom. Right there. And I don't want to say, I'm not going to tell your audience that it can get a little easier.
Sure.
And I wouldn't recommend 3 minutes to beginning. Mm-hmm. Start off with a minute.
Yeah.
If your water's cold enough, look, again, I've got mountain water coming into my house, to my cabin. I'm fortunate there. But man, if it takes your breath away, it's cold enough. That's okay. What I'll tell you.
Perfect. All right, man. Let's jump into our rapid fire questions. Ooh, sure. Fire. Number one, what is the one hobby that you wish you got into?
I did get into it. I just never really perfected it. And that's playing a musical instrument. Definitely playing guitar. I'm pretty good. I can sit in a group of people and go along with chords. But yeah. I had a skill there. I could have been much better because I had such a great ear for music.
Nice. I love it. Next up, what did you want to be when you were a child?
I don't know that I ever wanted to be anything. Maybe the lines of my dad, military, army, that kind of a thing, because that's what I was exposed to. So yeah. Probably that.
Okay. Next up, what is your favorite movie or TV show?
It's A Wonderful Life. I've tortured my kids too. Every Thanksgiving, I would make the entire family. We're watching It's a Wonderful Life tonight. And it's funny now because I just went to Thanksgiving to my daughter's house and she's got a 6-year-old and a newborn. And she made Caden sit down after Thanksgiving and watch It's a Wonderful Life. So nice. It was a beautiful thing to watch that transition.
Oh, I love it. Next up, what movie would you choose if you got to play a character in it?
Ooh, probably Michael Clayton. Really interesting movie. I love the storyline behind it. Most people aren't going to know what that is, but yeah, I'm going to go with Michael Clayton.
I love it, man. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Next up, who is your favorite superhero?
On my website, it says, stop looking for heroes and be one. I'm really careful there. I've had a lot of really great mentors, and I think Jim Rohn is up there. I think Gay Hendricks is up there. They've influenced me greatly. So Napoleon Hill are some of the other ones that have written this, given us great books and knowledge and wisdom to go by. So if I had to stop and pick one, it would probably be Jim Rohn.
I love it, man. He's definitely influenced a lot of the people that we follow and that a lot of the mindset.
Time Tony. Oh yeah, he influenced Tony big time.
Big time. All right, last question.
Yeah.
If you were a board game, what would it be?
If I was a board game, what would I be? Stratego.
Stratego. I love it, man. This is so powerful. This is so much fun, Dave. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast.
Absolutely. I've
thoroughly enjoyed the conversation, and I cannot wait to continue building our friendship and relationship throughout the years. Thanks 100%. So much.
My pleasure.
And man, until the next episode, we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode on Hacks and Hobbies. We absolutely appreciate your contribution. You can find additional notes on hacksandhobbies.com. Please share the podcast with your friends and tell them what you learned about our guest today.